from Deuteronomy 4:25-31. After you've had children and grandchildren and have lived in the land a long time, if you then become corrupt and make any kind of idol, doing evil in the eyes of the Lord your God and provoking him to anger, I will call heaven and earth as witness against you this day that you will quickly perish from the land that you are crossing Jordan to possess. You will not live there long, but will surely be destroyed. The Lord will scatter you among the peoples, and only a few of you will survive among the nations to which the Lord will drive you. There you will worship man-made gods of wood and stone, which cannot see or hear or eat or smell. But if from there you seek the Lord your God, you will find him, if you look for him with all your heart and with all your soul. When you are in distress and all these things have happened to you, then in later days you will return to the Lord your God and obey him. For the Lord is a merciful God. He will not abandon you or destroy you or forget the covenant with your forefathers, which he confirmed to them by oath.
You know, as I get close to this, as I got close to this time right now to get up here and speak, you know, it reminds me often of the comedian Laurel and Hardy, and I think it's Oliver would always say, "This is another fine mess you've gotten us into, Stanley." And I think that I often wonder if when they were trying to replace Judas, and they were casting lots, and the lot fell upon Matthias. I wonder if when it actually fell on Matthias, if he really understood what it was he was getting himself into. And so sometimes I feel like we cast lots or something, and it falls on me, and I don't really understand what I'm getting myself into. But I've agonized a little bit over what I was going to say today. This is supposed to be a lesson on church budget, and while that is an important thing, I think it's also can lend itself to not being an exciting thing, although that the reality is we each live our own lives. Our budget is something that is extremely important to us, maybe not at the beginning of the month when we first get paid, but certainly at the end of the month when we start looking to see the debits don't always match the credits, and we find out that maybe we're a little short. But I've entitled this lesson, Looking to the Future, because there's lots that we can learn from what has just happened, from the things we have done and the reasons why we have done it, but it really only gives us benefit if we're going to use this information in order to look towards the future. And I want to thank Dave for his lesson last week. It was what I would consider to be a difficult lesson to give on the biblical reasons and parts were about giving, biblical giving. It's not something that we like to spend a lot of time studying, because sometimes we feel it would compel us to do some things that we're not comfortable with, giving outside of our own comfort zone. But I want to talk a little bit about, to start off with, this past year. One of the things that has been said to me, and maybe some of the other leaders, and I know my wife even made comment on it this morning, is that people really have no idea what it costs, what kind of money it takes to operate the church itself. When we publish our weekly guide for services, inside it always has down what the weekly contribution was before and what our budget is. And sometimes we look at that and we say, well, it has been $3,350.62. And we can look at that number, and sometimes we say, well, that seems like a lot of money. That's a big chunk of change. Sometimes it would be more than some of us make a week. In fact, probably a lot of us a week. So it's I think I remember, I don't remember if it was Jim Rollins that had the bumper sticker on it that says, I get paid weekly, and it was spelled W-E-A-K-L-Y. But, you know, the numbers sometimes mean something, sometimes they seem overwhelming, sometimes they don't mean anything at all. But just a couple of items, just so you kind of get things in perspective, is that the utilities, to keep the lights on and the heat going and the gas and pay the water and the trash, it runs us $246 every week to maintain this facility that we get to worship here in comfort in, and we get to have our office space in. To maintain all that runs $413 a week average. What we have committed to helping those that are poor and those that are needy run us $185 a week. And the missions that we have chosen to support run us $325 a week. And so, while that's only a portion of what we spend every week, every month, it is still kind of gives us some sort of insight into what it costs to operate. Now, sometimes we think that it's all worthwhile. When we sit here in this air-conditioned building in the middle of summer when it's, for us, a stifling 90 degrees outside, and we have the air conditioner turned on so that it stays a cool, I don't know what it's set at, but I wouldn't want to guess too low, because then we might say, well, you should have it higher, but let's just say 75 degrees, and then we get the electric bill at the end of the month, and it's $1,000. So the question is, you know, is it worth a little sweat to not spend another $600 a month to air condition the building? But those are the things that, while they just happen, because we come in and it's cool when the thermostat is set right, and it seems like it's been working pretty good lately, those are expenses that come up. Also, as any of you that have live in a house or an apartment, anything that's not considered a tent, realize that sometimes things break and things happen, and so things pop up once in a while. I know this last year we had an interesting sinkhole in the back of the church here, and we knew it was there, but it wasn't really until we parked Mr. Art Sharp's motorhome there, and it began to sink into the sinkhole, that we realized that we had a serious problem. But those kind of things happen. Another issue that's just we don't always know or see is happening with our baptistry. One of the things that happens in the electronic age is we show pictures on the screen. Well, something that probably none of us ever thought about was when the screen's down and the water's heated, you get steam back there, and when you get steam back there, stuff can grow. And when stuff grows, that, you know, that's kind of gross. But it's and don't worry, we're not being the air's not being polluted here. But it is something that you know, things happen, and it takes effort, takes time from people, and generally it takes some money to correct those things. Another thing that's happened this last year was most of you, or a lot of you, remember Arthur Sharp. You know, and Arthur spent a lot of time, a lot longer than he had anticipated, being unemployed. And there was a lot of effort made by the congregation and also by many of you individually in helping Arthur get through the tough time that he was experiencing, and also in helping him get back to Tennessee, where he is. He's now living. Things have not progressed as easily as he would like to have, or wanted them to, but he is working, and he is also working on repairing the relationship with his family. So that was something that we contributed to and accomplished last year. But the thing that has been interesting is even though over the course of the year we did not meet our budget, something did happen. It reminds me of the story of Elijah and the widow at Zarephath, where she was out getting a little water so she could make her and her son a small cake, and because there was a famine in the land and there was no food to be had, and she had a little bit of oil and a little bit of meal, and she was going to make one last meal basically for her and her son. And Elijah asked her to go make him a cake, and she did it. But what happened was there was a miracle that took place there, and the oil that she had and the meal that she had, they never ran dry. as long as Elijah was there and she had pledged this to this man of God. And it's the same thing with our finances here. Even though it's been a tough year and there's been some challenges, when we've needed to go to the jar of oil, so to speak, there's always been oil there. And all together, as individuals, there's been a lot of generosity that's gone on in helping some of the families that have had specific difficulties this year. It's not an easy thing to realize that you need help, but it's an overwhelming thing when those that you call your fellow brothers and sisters come to your aid and help you through that tough time. And it means a lot, and it shows truly the commitment that you have to God and His people, and God recognizes it. But as we get into this new year, which we have already started, it's kind of hard to know what this year will bring. But I want to bring up the guidance that Ezra gave us in his book, because we know that there was a remnant that was sent back to Jerusalem after God's people had been in captivity in Babylon for 70 plus years. And Ezra was part of that contingent to go back. And Cyrus, the king, who was moved by God to help in this effort, to provide money, to provide materials, to provide anything that was needed to make the rebuilding of the temple and the walls around Jerusalem, he was willing to give. And as Ezra was about to set off on this journey across this land where there could be lots of marauders or people looking to kill or to steal amongst those that had things, King Cyrus offered Ezra a guided escort, an armed military to go with him. And Ezra turned it down because he wanted to put his trust in the Lord. And he knew that God, because they were doing what God wanted, God would protect them. So we're going to put our trust in God as this new year begins. And we believe that God will, if we are doing His will, doing His work, He will support it. There are many works that we have pledged our support to over the years. We have renewed many of our commitments. We've renewed our commitment to Don Kinder and his work going on in Korea, Matt and Caitlin and the work that they are doing in evangelizing in China, Rodrigo Mentieta and his death ministry down in south of Mexico City. We have continued to pledge our support for him. And Jacqueline and Ricardo at the City of Children, those that are growing up in that orphanage there. We receive many requests for help because as times are tough, many churches have drawn back from those things that they have supported in the past. We believe that those that we have chosen are good things. They're conducted by people that are doing the work for God's glory and not for their own. And so we have decided that we will continue to support them in the amount that we have in the past. I think, though, that struggling is a good thing. I think one of the problems that we suffer from in this country is we have not known struggle. There was a book written some time ago about the greatest generation. I think one of the things that made that generation good was they knew how to struggle. It is hard sometimes to see ourselves struggling. It is hard to watch someone else struggle. It is hard sometimes to accept the fact that those we love are struggling. I know that, and it's a silly thing, but two of my kids left yesterday to go back to school, to go back to college, and they're in Oklahoma. Well, the high in Oklahoma City for the last several weeks has been somewhere around 41 degrees, and so my kids were both whining really because we have had an extraordinarily beautiful December here. I mean, it hasn't been. It couldn't be any nicer anywhere. And they were going back to a place where the high was 41 degrees. And I think
if it ever got down to 41 here, it was probably in the middle of the night and we didn't notice it because the heater was running. But the reason I bring this up is that I got a enjoyment out of their whining because you know, it's I want my kids to struggle. I really do. And that might sound like a mean thing, but that's one of the reasons why it was important for us for them to go away and go to college, because you know it's not so easy to struggle when you're living with mom and dad, because mom and dad have this tendency to make things okay, and it's good to have struggles, because when we struggle, it lets us know that we need help, and when we need help, we have to decide where is it we're going to go look for that help. Now, and a lot of times we're okay in most ways, but if we struggle, we know that we need God in our lives. We know that we need our fellow Christians in our lives. And so it's through struggle that we can grow. You know, God tells us how we can build our faith. And it's not by things going easy all the time. It's by being tested. It's by being made to struggle. And life for us many times is too easy. And when it is easy, we begin to think that we have it all under control. So as this coming year comes, I'm sure it'll bring opportunity for us to reach out to the community around us. Excuse me. And when we think about struggling, a lot of times we think about economic problems, economic woes. But I think the message of Christ is not always to heal the economic woes, but is to reach out and show people that they need to be dependent upon God and that this is a spiritual thing. It doesn't mean that there won't be opportunities to help with feeding the hole in the stomach, because that also is an important thing. But along with that, we need to show people that they need Christ in their life. I think, though, too, for us as a congregation, that it'll show us where we put our trust, that we realize that with faith, if money is needed, it will be there. This has been shown to us in the past, that when the needs do arise, the money is available and the need is taken care of. We also want to continue to look for ways where we can be more effective in our evangelizing. One of the things the leadership is looked at, and there will be some more discussion on this informationally next week, about an associate minister, someone to help evangelize the young adults ages 18 to 30. And that's not a strict age. We might have them go up to age 32 or 33. But the point is, it's that part of the culture that speaks a different language. I never realized that I had changed so much until I discovered that I couldn't communicate with my children. But it is a different mindset, and we need to reach out to them, because these people, everybody, but this age group especially, are looking for answers. They're looking for direction in their lives. And I think that we can all agree that the answer is with God. The answer is through Jesus Christ. We also want to continue the growth in our countywide youth activities. Something that died several years ago was these countywide youth meetings. When I was a young person in high school, we used to meet with all the churches from Oxnard, Santa Paula, Camarillo, Santa Barbara, Thousand Oaks, from all. And we'd have Bible bowls, we'd have things. And that kind of died out. But we've seen a resurrection, so to speak, of that. There's been a few new people that it's part of their hearts to develop this, and it's growing. The last countywide we had here was it in December? I guess it was the first part of December, and we had the church from Santa Barbara drove down here with six kids. And it's something that's growing. This end of this month, we'll meet in Simi Valley. And we expect Conejo to join us there as well. So there's been a resurgence of this. And it's great because it gives young people the chance to know that they're not alone. It's not just us and them. There's other kids. There's other young people around that have a common bond, a common faith. And one other thing that Dave and I have discussed, and this might be a surprise, I'm going to say it anyways, is we've also discussed having a seniors ministry. And this has kind of been something that we've kind of been kicking around. But even though I'm more hopeful about this now because my dad doesn't know this yet, but I've kind of thinking that maybe that would be a ministry that he would like to engage in. So don't spill the beans on him. I want to at least run it by him first so that it won't be a shock because he is 80 years old and I don't want him to have a heart attack. But it's important that we communicate these things and know, because in Acts 6, the first four verses, you know, the church is in its infancy. There's a lot of things going on. There's some things that are being missed. And I'm going to read this passage to you. It says, "In those days, when the number of disciples was increasing, the Grecian Jews among them complained against the Hebraic Jews because their widows were being overlooked in the daily distribution of food. So the 12 gathered all the disciples together and said, 'It would not be right for us to neglect the ministry of the Word of God in order to wait on tables. Brothers, choose 7 men among you who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. We will turn this responsibility over to them and will give our attention to prayer and the ministry of the Word.'" You know, when we read this verse, I remember distinctly the thing that was always brought out was the fact that choosing 7 men among you who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. And we concentrate on the fact that these 7 individuals, and they name them later in a couple verses later, but we concentrate on the fact that they were full of wisdom and the Spirit. But what we don't look at is the fact of who went out and found these men. Who was the one that was instrumental in choosing them? And it wasn't the 12 apostles. It was the people that were involved in that community, in that congregation. And they knew. In this sense, I know we don't have elders here yet, but we have a leadership. But the reality for us here is that it was us that chose these men. And it's important that we have the support. It's important that we have the backing. It's important that we all are of like mind in pursuing these things. Because the reality is, just a few people choosing or a few people directing or a few people picking is not going to be successful. It's only successful is if we all support the ministry. And so it's important that we communicate, but it's also important that we speak to those that are making these decisions. It's important that we approach them and let them know what we think. And that doesn't mean that we always have to say that's a good idea, it's a good thing. If there's some concern, if there's some distress that's created by it, it's important that that's communicated. Feedback, input, communication. And one other thing too about the budget ahead is too many times we end up realizing that if there's a need, we fix it. But a lot of times we're not, because we don't know what's going on or we don't know how things are being done, we don't find it as necessarily a priority, or there's other things that we support. And we would like to develop a surplus too. So one is put in the budget. Not a big one, but I figure we start small. That way when things do arise, we don't always necessarily have to come to the congregation as a whole to find if there is support of those things. But I think this next year is going to be a great year. I'm certainly an optimist about this coming year. I believe in man's unique ability amongst God's creation. In Genesis 1, God says, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." God gave us the ability to dream, to create. I think that's an important key in the future, because regardless or in spite of what man tries to do to himself, what we try to do to ourselves, the idea that we can move and rise beyond is an ability that serves mankind well. I think this coming decade we will see changes that will amaze us. There'll be all kinds of new innovations and inventions that come about based on things that are already in place. We're talking about healthcare, longevity of life, nanotechnology. There's all kinds of things that are coming about, and I think they have positive effects on things as a whole, our economy and others. The problem becomes, it's like the people that went and built the tower, what was known as the Tower of Babel. We have to realize that in all this, these creations, all these jobs that are created from these things, is that we still have a dependency upon God and not upon our own thinking or our own designs. The people in Babel found that out the hard way, and we have to make sure that it doesn't happen to us. God has continued to show us over and over again that if we trust in Him and if we follow in His ways, that He will bless His people. That's the story of the Old Testament. When His people were faithful to Him, they were blessed. When they were unfaithful, they had big problems. And we have to make sure that we are following God's ways. We know that God will bless us. We must remember, too, to use these blessings in His service. And not like the man in Luke 12, where he decided he became so prosperous that he had to take the money that he was making and build bigger barns so he could store all his stuff, so he could amass a greater fortune. And that's not the purpose. The purpose is to use them to God's service. It reminds me of the story of the man that showed up at the pearly gates, and he was talking to Peter, and he had a briefcase with him, and it had gold bars in there. And he asked Peter, he says, "Hey, you know, I want to see if I can bring this into heaven." And Peter said, "Well, I'm going to have to go check." And so he went back, and he came back a few minutes later and says, "Well," he says, "it's okay, although I don't know why anybody would want to bring a bunch of pavement into the pearly city. The streets are made of gold." It's a joke. All right. But I have personally tested the fact that God blesses those that trust Him. I've personally tested this in my life. I have on numerous occasions, I've committed what I was making and the job I was doing to God. And God blessed me, sometimes in crazy ways. I remember I was fortunate enough at the age of 15 to be able to afford an airplane. And, you know, that was kind of a unique thing amongst my peers at the time. But I've had other times in my life when I knew I had everything under control and I had finally made it. And I didn't say I didn't need God anymore, but I acted that way. And God would take things away from me. And so I've tested this. I know God will bless us if we commit ourselves to Him, both individually and as a body. But we must also continue to seek God's wisdom and guidance in the decisions that we make as individuals and as a church. And I firmly believe that prayer is the most important part of this. And why is that? Well, it focuses our minds. It puts our hearts in the proper place. Because as I kneel before God and I seek God's guidance, as I seek the answers to the questions I have in my life, I realize that it's not up to me. It's up to me to ask God and to see where it leads me. The future is bright, but we must put God in it. I also think that as the future unfolds, it will provide us both opportunities and it'll provide us tests. Opportunities to do great things for God, but it'll also provide us tests. We'll have questions as to what is the right direction to take, and it puts us at God's mercy if we ask Him to. But I am an optimist about the future. I think God will show His grace and His mercy to us if we but trust Him. I want to offer one final thought here and in conclusion. And it has to do with each of us individually. It has to do with money in our lives. You know, one of the things that we tend to disregard in the Bible, but it comes up quite a few times, is the idea of fasting. As Americans, we don't like to fast, you know, because if we're fasting, that means we don't want to admit that we're overweight and we want to fast. But fasting wasn't really for, in the Bible, biblical fasting was not for weight loss purposes. Fasting was to take away the ease that we had and to make us focus on what was truly important in our lives. So I want to talk to each one of us. I want to bring up the idea of a financial fast for us. A financial fasting is a little different. Generally, you won't go hungry, but it will help us each focus our lives on the purpose of money and the way we spend our money. And the idea of a financial fast is to take and spend only on necessities. Now, that's a problem sometimes because I know our idea of what is a necessity sometimes is a little vague. But I want to encourage each of you to do this. And I'm not saying I just want you to do it because my family's going to participate in this as well. But it focuses on how we spend our money. One of the things that I read about and has to do with the use of debit cards and credit cards. Now, sometimes we use credit cards or debit card and we pay it off and we think it's no big deal. But I was reading that there was a study done on the psychological effects of doing that as opposed to using cash. And how, even though we pay it off, sometimes the average expenditure is larger because we use a debit card as opposed to having to whip out the dollar bills. But as the real thing, though, is I want us to think about how important some things that we feel important are. See how and analyze for yourself how our spending habits show our confidence or our lack of confidence in God. There's going to be lots of opportunities this coming year to show that we are God's people. And I pray that as they come up, we will take advantage of those. I pray that as they happen, we will recognize them and we will seek God's wisdom in dealing with those opportunities. Because in reality, the purpose of our life here is not to see how many toys we can accumulate or how many things we can accumulate. But the reality is our purpose here is to help to seek and save the lost, to bring the gospel to those that are in need. And everybody needs that. Rich, poor, whoever. And I hope that as we look to this new year, we will continue to seek God's guidance, seek His blessings in our lives. I know there's many here that are facing questionable times. There are some that don't know about what the future of the job is. Some that maybe have suffered cuts in their pay. They still have job security, but cuts in pay. And frankly, I don't know what the future holds as far as which direction the state of California decides to go. But I do know that if we put our trust and our confidence in God, that He will see us through, that we will live our lives accordingly, and that we will be accounted as good and faithful servants, and we will be able to help those that are in need. Well, as we finish up here today, I would hope that we would each commit our lives to more prayer and to look at how we can use the opportunities given us this year to spread the word of God to those that are in need. Now at this time, if there's some need that you have pressed on your heart, if there's some way that we can help, we can pray for you, if there's some other thing that the family here can do for you, if you feel that you have not put God on in your life and you haven't put Jesus on in baptism, we have the opportunity here in our steamy bath back here to do that for you. But at any rate, if we can help you in any way, we ask you to come forward as we stand and sing the song.